Good morning. So last Sunday was Father's Day, of course, and for many it's a day of celebration for fathers and grandfathers, and for those who are fathers, it's likely a day that many of us gave thanks for the gift of children. I actually had a good Father's Day and was able to call my good father and wish him well. But you know, not everyone had a good father. Some people, perhaps many, had abusive fathers, neglectful fathers, distant fathers. Study after study shows that a withdrawn parent is one of the chief causes of emotional and mental illness and distress. When a child does not experience love, acceptance, protection, then they often turn to other things to fill a hole that's been left behind. And I wonder if any of you feel that way. Did any of you feel the indelible mark left on your soul by some pain inflicted on you by one who was actually supposed to be one of the first sources of health in this world for you? What happens when that kind of soul wound is not tended to or healed? In his novel, The Paper Men, William Golding offers a veiled biography of the life of a famous writer, Wilfred Barclay, who is tormented by three witches in his life: alcohol and sex and immortality. And he confesses, "I could describe my whole life as a movement from one moment of farce to another farce, on one plane or another, nature's comic. Her clown with a red nose and ginger hair and trousers falling down at precisely the wrong moment. Yes, right from the cradle." To mock one of Johnny Lee's old country songs, "Why do humans look for soul in all the wrong places?" And if we don't get some end to our search, then like Barclay, we simply skip from one empty and shallow farce to the next. Most of us know the old joke: on a dark night, a policeman comes up on a man hunched over, obviously desperately searching for something under a bright street lamp. And he said, "What's the matter?" asks the policeman. "I've lost my keys," the fellow says. "Well, let me help you," the cop responds. And after several minutes, the policeman finally stands up straight and says, "Hey, we've searched this whole area. I just don't think they're here. Are you sure this is where you dropped them?" And the man responds, "Oh, no, I dropped them over there," pointing to a dark alley across the way. "Then why on earth are you looking here, good man?" asks the policeman. "Well," the man says, "the light's better over here." The problem with our modern search to fill the hunger and thirst of our souls is that the light is often being shined in the wrong place. And like a moth to flame, we're drawn desperately to the hope that more will somehow make up for what the soul is desperately lacking. Back in 1992, which seems like ancient history, but one of the best-selling books was this intriguing, though not necessarily easily digested, work by the former monk-turned-psychotherapist Thomas More. The book was entitled Care of the Soul. The book begins with these words: "The great malady of our time, implicated in all of our troubles and affecting us individually and socially, is loss of soul. When the soul is neglected, it just doesn't go away. It appears symptomatically in obsessions, in addictions, in violence, and in loss of meaning. The emotional complaints of our time, emptiness, meaninglessness, vague depression, disillusionment about marriage or family and relationship, a loss of values, yearning for personal fulfillment, a hunger for spirituality, all of these symptoms," he writes, "reflect a loss of soul and let us know what the soul craves. We yearn excessively for entertainment and power and intimacy and sexual fulfillment and material things, and we think we can find these things if we just discover the right relationship or job, the right church or therapy. But without soul," he writes, "whatever we find will be unsatisfying, for what we truly long for is the soul in each of these areas. lacking that soulfulness, we attempt to gather these alluring satisfactions to us in great masses, thinking apparently that quantity will make up for a lack of quality, he closes. And so what might be the prescription for cultivating the soul? Well, we have it right here in Psalm 42 that Carol read for us just a moment ago. This is a beautiful bit of poetry written by David, we're told, for the director of music for a group known as the Sons of Korah, kind of the ancient Levitical choir who were appointed to sing during worship in the temple. But beyond what it was, it is a bold, honest, confessional psalm in which David actually reveals his own struggle with his own anemic soul. Verse 6, "Why are you so full of heaviness, O my soul? Why are you so disquieted, disturbed within me?" In other words, David, King David, though he has power and wealth and fame, his soul is deeply disturbed. There's something amiss. He knows it and he feels it. He says that his tears are a visible testimony to his doubt. "My tears have been my food day and night, while all day long they say to me, where now is your God?" I wonder if you've ever felt that way. Your soul is disquieted. It's disturbed. I wonder if you feel that way now. Amazing how something really that was written thousands of years ago can actually speak to this moment, this time, right here, right now. It may not have been an absentee father that has brought about your tears today. It may be the end of a marriage or a loving partnership or the disastrous decisions your child is making. It may be that notice you got from your boss that your days are numbered, or maybe the call from the doctor, or simply the day-to-dayness of life. For whatever reason, let's be honest, many of us can pray with David. "As the deer longs for the water brooks, so longs my soul for you, O God. My soul is a thirst for God, a thirst for the living God." What then is the answer? Well, let's just skip a little bit through this psalm. If you look at verse 9, or I'm going to read them for you, so you don't have to look at it. One deep calls to another in the noise of your cataracts. Those are not the cataracts many of us are dealing with right now. The simpler version, the more kind of simple modern version, is deep calls to deep in the roar of your waterfalls. Deep calls to deep. I want to suggest to you that a first place to begin allowing our deep need to find a place of deep satisfaction to our soulless searching is to actually realize what does and what does not feed us. A few weeks back, I ran across that film, Citizen Kane. Orson Welles' epic film is full of life lessons about the futility of things that do not assuage the deep hungers of the heart. And there's this crucial scene when the wife of the wealthy Cain tells him that she's had enough of a marriage not grounded in love, but in the trappings of wealth and power and prestige. When he says, "But you can't leave," she answers, "I'm going to," and out she goes. At which point, Cain begins to pitch a full-fledged tantrum. He's walking around one of his museum-like rooms, and he's throwing possessions up in the air and against the wall and to the ground. Great symbolism right there. Cain's wife knew what Cain could not see, that there are some things that cannot be satiated with wealth or power, that there are simply some things that the material world cannot provide. And I'm not for one moment going to stand here before you and tell you they're not aspects of this very material world that I don't like. I dare say there are many of them I love. I love my home. I like my comfortable furniture. I like a good night's sleep, which is harder and harder to come by. I like a bold glass of Merlot, a strong cup of coffee. I like these things in a list we don't have long enough to explore. But I also know, in a moment's notice, this heart of mine could stop beating, and all of that stuff remains right here, while the substance of who I am will then stand before God. As the Christian writer John Ortberg likes to say, at the end of the game, it all goes back in the box, And by the box, he means all those things we played with here in this world. But the deep things, those things that in Jesus' words, moth and rust cannot destroy, those go on to meet our Maker. I wonder if you know that Alexander the Great had conquered the entire civilized world, and almost at the moment he did, he quickly became disillusioned with life because he began to understand that actually possessions don't bring happiness. He had enough presence of mind to request that when he died, as he lay in repose, he would have his hands open. He wanted people who came by to see his body to realize this man who owned virtually the entire world left with nothing. And we would do well to begin our journey toward a deeper existence by realizing what does and does not quench our thirst or feed our hunger. So the first step is just realizing what really does feed the soul. A second step in allowing deep to speak to deep is to actually go deep. What do I mean by that? Well, even if I'm meddling a little bit here, I think many of us, this goes for me too, we're a bit reluctant to go deep. What do I mean by that? I mean simply that we step beyond our outer actions we offer, for instance, in this place, and allow the outside to match up with what's going on the inside. Let me speak a word about how we in the Episcopal Church worship. I believe our liturgy to be some of the most wonderful, if not the most wonderful, offered in the Christian church. But what you and I do in this place is more than religious calisthenics. When we listen to the scriptures and the sermon, when we confess those things done and left undone, when we kneel before the holy sacraments and take them within ourselves, this mingling of corporate and private acts should not just be a whisper in our ears, but acts that pierce our souls, that actually change our lives. If we're serious, we must be willing to really, really go deep. But, you know, we are hesitant. Everybody who began therapy and got something really out of therapy, initially, almost everybody resists therapy. Everybody who has found recovery in the 12-step program, actually, most of them resisted entering recovery. And most of us who want a deep spiritual life, it's just not natural. So we kind of push back against the intangible, the soul-filled world, because it's not what we really at the heart want to do, because we might be afraid of what we find if we go too deep. Just before the Middle Ages, the most widely used form of farming was called skittering. It was a small instrument. It was about like a rake was brought behind a goat or a horse to till the ground, prepare for planting of seeds. What happened, of course, was that only the top inch or so of the soil was turned over. And while there was a harvest, it was usually very small. And it actually contributed to the pervasive hunger and poverty of those days. But when iron became widely used, so did new tools for farming, one of which was large, heavy iron blades, which could be brought behind the strength of a team of oxen. Now, those blades would go deep, very deep. And when they did, farming became more difficult. Roots and rocks were encountered, stumps, along with rabbit holes, wasp nests. But the end result, of course, of going deeper was that good, dark, rich soil would be turned up and turned over so that the deeper planting could take place and there was a better harvest. So the second step I'd like to suggest to you to find the feeding for your soul in a soulless world is don't go shallow, go deep. Go in for the whole treatment. Deep planting is difficult. You'll turn up, for sure, roots of old wounds and rocks of addiction and wasps of nests of things you simply don't want to turn loose. But then the end result is a great and magnificent harvest. It is a new you. You remember what Jesus said to Nicodemus when they began their religious discussion one night. He looked at Nicodemus and said, you know, Nicodemus, you don't need more religion. What you need is to be born again. You need to go deep. You need a whole renovation project. So then lastly, how to ultimately assuage that hunger and end that thirst? Because the light does keep shining in the wrong places. Peace is over here, it's in your bank account. Give in just one more time to your addiction. Don't turn loose of your anger, it served you so well. But we know that's not where the truth is. I'll be honest, I'll say it's actually ultimately not just in St. Martin's or in the Bible or in church school or in service or contributions to the church. All those might be part of the deep planting that brings about a harvest, but the real answer to what I need to feed on and the water I need to drink from is to go even deeper than that, deeper still than even this place, deeper than what we do here, deeper still. And what is that deeper place? That deeper place is in that last verse of the psalm. It's simple, and yet at the same time, it's incredibly hard. That last verse, put your trust in God. That's it. Plain and simple. That's what it means to allow deep to speak to deep. The deepest needs and wants and hungers and thirst of your heart find their rest in the deepest place of all creation, in God. It's simple because there's the answer. That's the end of your search, right there, God. It's hard because it is so very contrary to our human nature and the culture in which we live. But again, if we're quiet for just a moment, if we'll just lay still all the noises in our attention deficit disorder culture, isn't the prayer of our soul that of David's? My soul is athirst for God, athirst for the living God. I would bet more than a few of us are praying that prayer in our souls right now. So if we have that need within us, do we really have a choice to go any other place but to God? We can keep looking in the wrong place. We can keep drinking from the poison well. We can keep eating from the spoiled meal. Or we can look to God. We can drink from God. We can feed on God and be reminded to be called, to be converted into the person you were created to be. You were created to be the object of God's love. And you see, that's what heals those wounds. That's what fills those empty places, opening up those to the deep love of God. I love that little line from C.S. Lewis's little work, The Four Loves. He writes, God, who needs nothing, loves into existence holy, superfluous creatures in order that he may love and perfect them. You and I were loved into existence, and the way we make our way into the perfect whole life is to allow that love to fill us even more and more. Disconnected from that love, and our souls will always hunger. They'll always thirst. Connected to that love, engulfed by that love, and the soul begins to heal, and you begin to become who God intends you to be. There's a great old medieval fable about a mother tiger who died giving birth to her cub. And the new creature wandered the jungle without any family support until a pack of goats came upon him and invited him to join their company. And as the months went by, the creature began to take on the qualities of his goat companions. And one day, the king of the tigers saw this little cub acting like the silly goat, and he roared out. He said, "What's the meaning of this ridiculous masquerade? Why are you behaving like a goat?" All the little tiger knew to do was to kind of bleat nervously and to nibble on some grass. So then it dawned on the king that this little cub had no idea who he was. So he took the little one down to the river and let him see for the first time a reflection of himself. "See," the king tiger said, "you're not a goat, you're a tiger." And then he laid back his head and let the creature hear how a tiger was supposed to sound. And at that, the king tiger said, "You follow me, little one, and I'll teach you to become the grand thing you already are and possess in you to become." So that's the answer for us. Let's realize what does and does not feed us. Let's be willing to go deep. Be willing to go deeper still. the deepest place. How? Put your trust in God. And you'll become the grand thing you already are and possess in you to become. Put your trust in the deep love of God and have those empty holes filled, those old wounds healed, your soul brought to life again. What the deep love of God heals is you. And that is a grand and wonderful thing indeed. Trust in the deep love of God and be made whole. Amen.